and welcome to Spawned, a common sense and hopefully fun discussion on parenting and parenting culture. Hey, I'm Kristen Chase.
And I'm Liz Gumbiner, and we are the co-founders of CoolMomPics.com. And on today's episode of Spawned, we are talking about simple ways we can all create real connections with kids, very timely for the start of the year, with the help of a great guest, an acclaimed parenting expert, author of Mommy Burnout, TEDx speaker, and registered play specialist, Dr. Cheryl Ziegler.
And as always, we will close out our show with our cool picks of the week. So Liz, you know, we talk about resolutions a lot. We know a lot of parents this year, and I think most years in particular, want to spend more quality time with their family. And, you know, we're hitting that point in January when even our best laid plans have gotten a little sidetracked.
Yeah, we're talking to all of you out there who's like, I'm not going to eat any carbs for 6 months. And then like January 3rd, you're like, ooh, cookies. So I know what that's like. That's why I'm really glad we're talking today about ways to foster real communication with your kids in surprising ways. So let's tell you a little bit more about our guest, Dr. Cheryl Ziegler, who you may have seen before because she's kind of everywhere. She's a psychotherapist, an acclaimed parenting expert, speaker, and the author of Mommy Burnout, which was a top parenting book of 2018, and also the winner of the International Latino Book Awards Best Parenting and Family Book of the Year. That is super cool.
And she's appeared as a mental health expert on more than 100 shows, including some of our own favorites, The Today Show and Katie Couric. And you can find articles from her everywhere, from the New York Times to Time and the Washington Post.
And she also happens to be a spokesperson for today's podcast sponsor, Milk Life, and their Love What's Real campaign. And one thing that we love is that as a first-generation Cuban-American, Dr. Ziegler draws from her own early childhood and teen years in a blended family, which helps inform her own perspective on all kinds of families, raising all kinds of kids in today's world. And you know, that's something we really care about. And one of the things she does is help her clients address ways to find meaningful, real moments of connection as a family. So welcome, Dr. Ziegler.
Thank you, guys. Wow. I don't know who you're talking about.
Everybody always says that. They always have these amazing resumes. And then they're like, wait, that's me? Yes, that's you. You've done great things.
Who is that person?
And can we call you Cheryl? Do you prefer Dr. Ziegler?
You can call me Cheryl. That's
awesome.
Fine. Yes.
We're kind of cash around here with the first name stuff.
So, you know, I love this idea of connecting more with our kids. I know it's something that we all want to do more of. We talk to so many parents, you know, our Spawned listeners and on Cool Mom Picks, and it's always a big, I mean, whether you want to call it a resolution or a goal. And, you know, for me, we've spoken about this on past episodes. I really try to find, I have four kids, so try to find the moments, you know, travel has been one thing that we've done. I tend to give more experience gifts. I know, Liz, you have some other things that you've done. I know you have like family digital nights, or movie nights are a big thing with you guys. What else
yeah,
are some things that you do?
Well, also because as we start to have tweens and teens,
yes,
it's not like the same time that you had when you had like three-year-olds and four-year-olds. They've got other priorities and they've got friends and sleepovers and, oh, mom, I knew that we were going to have this family dinner, but please, I got invited to the show that my friend is
so
in.
Familiar.
And so like everything changes.
Yeah.
So, you know, especially because we have tweens and teens, one thing I think about a lot is the generation gap. And I'm wondering if it's bigger than it used to be or getting narrower, because it seems like these days, you know, there's a lot of concern about parents being friends instead of parents. You see parents and kids who wear similar clothes. They listen to similar music. They watch similar shows. Like, what are you seeing? Do you think there's still a big generation gap?
Yeah, there's so much there in what you guys just said. It's interesting in terms of the generation gap. I mean, age-wise, parents are having kids later in life, right? So age, literally in years, is in general growing between children and parents. But I completely agree. I mean, I listen to the same music as my kids listen to. It's not like I feel like, oh, now I have to listen to their music. And I sometimes like the same kind of styles as my 12-year-old daughter. And so I think that just in general, age is an interesting thing. But with parents and with people who are middle-aged, raising tweens and teens, there is a push toward health and vitality and youthfulness that makes it like, you know, parents are dressing kind of cool. They're dressing similar, not exactly like their kids, but they're dressing similarly and listening to that kind of music. So I think that's to our advantage, you know, like in our car, which when you're talking about how to connect with kids in such a busy world, I am a huge fan of people who are in cars with their kids, of using that as your opportunity to connect. It to me is actually like the number one place to connect with a kid, especially a teen, in the car. You can be singing along to the same kind of music. You can be listening to a podcast together. You can be listening to an audiobook together. There are so many things that you can do in that space. And especially if you kind of try to regulate the technology or the phone use, if you just stay engaged and you're talking and not at every red light, or, you know, you as the parent kind of looking at the phone, it's just a great opportunity to have this contained space to connect.
Oh, I love that.
They can't leave.
And you know what I love is, like, a few years back when my kids were maybe like 10 and 12 and they were just getting into music, they had very limited music that they liked. We were playing a game called Will They Like This? And so we would say, what do you like? And if someone said Taylor Swift, I'd be like, okay, let me play you early Madonna. Or if they liked Lady Gaga, we could also play Madonna. But we actually helped encourage each other's discovery of new music by them telling me something that they liked. And we'd listen to it together. And then me be like, ooh, well, here's something kind of cool from my day that you might like. And then that's how I found out that my kids liked Fiona Apple.
Yeah, I love that. If anybody listening has SiriusXM, there's a station called Pop Rocks.
Oh, yeah.
I love that station. So every day, at least once a day, I try to put something on, like Green Day or whatever's on, that, like, I'm like, oh my God, I used to love this song. And I will say they don't seem to be loving the 90s pop rock, but I'm trying. But that is exactly it. They can't go anywhere. And at this point, like you're saying, Taylor Swift, you know, this is another thing that's different. I know a lot of parents that are now also going to concerts with their kids.
Totally.
And to me, that's novel.
Kristen did that.
Oh, yeah.
Kristen.
It's an interesting experience because, you know, you need to drive home. So you've got to enjoy the concert in a different kind of way than perhaps you might have when you were younger. But it is fascinating. I've gone to a couple. I went to Taylor Swift. I went to Ed Sheeran. I've been to Imagine Dragons. So it's definitely something that we've done together.
Yeah. Now, I don't know about you guys, but when I was a kid, I didn't even go to any concerts. But I also don't know anybody who, like, went with their parents to concerts. That gap is closing in terms of interest in pop culture and music and art and all those kinds of things. And I think when parents, especially if tweens and teens, that's my specialty, really. Parents ask me every single week, you know, like, just how do I get through to them? How do I get them to talk to me after school? There's different strategies, but really the car is huge. And just being interested, being curious in their world is so key. Sometimes parents, you know, they're just like, oh yeah, just put your headphones on kind of thing. You know, listen to the music with them, watch the show with them, watch the movie with them, go to a concert with them. Those are outside of the car ways to connect that maybe a parent initially will say, well, that's not like really what I want to know. What I really want to know is how's school going? What's going on socially? I'm like, you got to put the time in there. If you put the time in there, eventually, all of a sudden, you're rocking out somewhere and they look over at you and they're like, by the way, so-and-so broke up with me. And you have to just wait for
it. So true. Mm-hmm. It's so true. And I love that you bring up the point that there is shared experience. I think sometimes parents feel like this connection has to come in deep, heavy conversation. When really, when you're singing a song together or you're vibing with them about the YouTuber and the drama or whatever it is that's going on in their lives, and you're just talking with them about that, you're showing them that you care. You're showing them that you're present. And they're going to be more apt to talk to you about the things that you want to get to. You know, it's like building rapport, right? It doesn't necessarily need to be that complicated. Of course, there are challenges, though, that families face with this, whether it's we're not as interested in their music or for whatever reason, it can be hard. So can you talk more about some of the challenges that you're seeing with the families you work with and what they're facing?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there are a lot of challenges. What I see, the number one challenge right now is social media.
Mm.
You know, they have a whole online world that oftentimes we really do not know about. And it's happening right next to you. Like literally makeups, breakups, plans to sneak out could be happening right next to you because they're just Snapchatting away. And so I see, you know, things for sure. Social media is probably number one. And I'd say the other biggest challenge that I see right now is just the overscheduling of kids. Parents don't have time. I mean, those are the things I'm talking about in my practice every week. It's just, well, they don't get home until 6 and I don't get home till 6 and I'm tired and I'm running around trying to put some sort of dinner together. And, you know, the notion of really sitting around a family table is pretty gone in our country. I think for parents who do it, there's a lot of pride around it and there should be. You have to make some sort of sacrifice in order to figure out how are you going to get your family of 4, 5, 6, whatever it is, to sit down and eat together at the same time. And then even when that happens, there's screens at the table. There are some pretty major challenges. So when the Milk campaign came to me and said, we want to just do a campaign about connection and families, I was like, yep, I'm really into that, because that is what I see as difficulty. Like when you're finding it hard to talk to them, what I'm seeing is like, first, you actually need to just get together uninterrupted. And that includes parents. It is not just kids who are hooked to their screens. It's parents as well. It's sort of like everybody making that commitment to be present and focused. And that's hard in this distracted world.
I think it's a noble idea. It's the idea of real connections with families. We can all use that, which is why I'm glad we're talking about that. So speaking of screens, how do you define real in terms of connection time? Like, does watching TV together count? Because I know we certainly have like family game nights on the Nintendo, or we have family movie nights. Does that count as making memories through shared experiences? Or do you think it should always be about like face-to-face talking?
I love that question. No, I mean, I think, like I said, my number one place where I think parents and tweens and teens can be connecting is like in a car when you shouldn't be face to face. And so
right.
Hopefully you're not. But I think that's such a great point to really just emphasize right now, is like our very first video game thing was just the Wii U, right? And so we would play tennis and we would play Just Dance. The key here is shared experience. You're having a shared experience. So here's the difference. When you are now, isn't this funny that TV is no longer the enemy? TV is like actually kind of family
100%.
Friendly.
Big screens 100%. Versus small screens.
Yes, exactly.
It's like if you have this TV sitting in the middle of your family room and everybody sits down, you know, and watches America's Got Talent, whatever, you know, something like family friendly that everybody can find something to enjoy. You're laughing, you're talking, everyone's giving their opinions. Oh, would you X them out or not? And all of a sudden, what you're realizing is that it is interactive. And that is connection. That's part A. And like for me, when we're watching like America's Got Talent or American Ninja Warrior, those are two shows that we watch as a family. All of a sudden, my kids are talking to me about what they want to be when they grow up. And oh, you know, do you think I could ever dance like that? And we really are spawning off and having off these like other great conversations because of it. But the difference is, to make it crystal clear for people, when you have a family of four all sitting in the family room, everybody with headsets on, an iPad or a phone, watching four different things, there's zero connection going on. There is no shared experience going on. And that's the difference.
That makes sense. And, you know, sometimes those are nice to have when we're all kind of sitting quietly alone. You know, especially for us with Cool Mom Tech, we hear a lot of times where movies, video games can get a bad rap. And I appreciate you clarifying and saying, you know, when you're all watching together, those two shows are staples in our home as well. We love those shows. Any cooking shows, MasterChef Junior as well. There are so many things out there now that the whole family can enjoy, thankfully, right? It's not like Caillou where we all had to suffer through.
Yeah. Oh, God.
It's so much better now. Like, I actually like what my kids want to watch. And so knowing we can all sit together, we can all interact and enjoy that connection. Now, we know that there are a lot of families out there, including ours sometimes, where the family movie night for 2 hours is hard. You know, family dinners are difficult. We can't get there every night for bedtime stories and tuck-ins. Especially now that my kids are older, you know, it's usually just like, good night. So can you talk more about how to find ways to squeeze that connected time into our schedule? And we know so many parents are so busy these days.
Yeah, and I think there's all different kinds of ways. One thing I will say is that I have learned, and I feel like I'm in the midway of this process. I don't feel like I've fully arrived, but I'm really learning to embrace technology because it is not going anywhere. And we have to learn how to work with it, how to make it work for us. So even though I speak a lot about, you know, the downside of particularly social media, I have found that if you can be really intentional about how to use technology, you can stay connected. So if I have to work late and I am not going to make it home, like you said, I'm not going to make it home for dinner or tuck in time at night, FaceTime. FaceTime is huge. Kids love FaceTime. They'll walk around the house and show me their homework and this is what I'm going to wear tomorrow, whatever it is. I think things like FaceTime, and that's also great for grandparents, you know, as a way to really stay connected because so many grandparents aren't really living around their kids. Using things even just like texting, especially for teens. I tell parents all the time, if you just had a tough interaction or you feel like you yelled or you overreacted, but everyone's kind of over it and they just need to go to bed, let's say at night, just send them a text. They've got their phones. They're going to read it. Send a text. And sometimes they say to me, it's amazing what I got back on that text, as opposed to if I would have walked into their room. We have to meet kids where they're at. And finding those times can just be a few minutes. But again, if it's intentional and you're focused, it is really quality over quantity.
I love that because some of us are parents with jobs outside the home or single parents or solo parents, as we've talked about on a recent episode. You know, like we don't always have the 2-hour movie night or dinner every night, not just because of us, but our kids are busy. Like I have kids that do theater and sometimes they get home from like a tech night rehearsal at 9 o'clock. So it's tough. One of the things that I've found that's been helpful, and I'd love to hear more from you, is what I started doing was incorporating kids into the things I had to do anyway. Instead of separating out my chores, like I have to do laundry, it was like, we have to do laundry. Or instead of like giving the kids a snack after school and then going into my room to do stuff, I would sit down with them and use that for like 10 minutes where I would have a snack too. Like, are those things that you recommend? Or are there other things that we can do to bring our kids into our worlds instead of us just joining theirs?
Well, I love that you said that, because we really are raising a generation of kids where we give them money for doing the most basic of things. Like they throw their blanket over the bed. Oh, I made my bed. Okay, here's $2. Like there's not this shared communal, like we're sorting socks together. So I have a newly 7-year-old and that's what we do together. We sort out socks. That's something he can do and he can sort them and then he can put them together. You're totally right. That's what we do. Another thing I do in the kitchen with the kids is I just give them a job. I am definitely the queen of like the 30-minute meals. So I'm not making anything elaborate. But now my 12-year-old, I mean, makes me a little nervous, but she wants to cut the vegetables now. She wants to start using a knife in the kitchen. And it's interesting. She does see it as like this big responsibility. Like she understands, like, I think I'm old enough to slice the peppers, Mom. And so it doesn't necessarily feel like a chore to them because I try to make it fun too, right? I'll be like, Alexa, play, you know, Top Pop. And this isn't every night, but a lot of nights, one kid's doing homework at the island. One kid is helping me prep with something. Another kid might be sorting socks, but we're all listening to music usually. And somebody sets the table. It's like that shared experience again. And it gives me something genuine to like when we sit down to be like, hey, you guys, thanks. Thanks for setting the table. Thanks for pouring the waters. That's another thing my 7-year-old does is a lot of times pour the water, you know? And then all of a sudden, like we're just starting off our dinner with like, everybody's been recognized.
Oh, that's nice.
It's really nice. We do recognitions. And I will say that one of my kids inevitably almost every night recognizes Mom for making this dinner. Like that's pretty awesome, I think. Like, I don't even know where that comes from, but I think it's because they're in the kitchen and doing it with me and they see me literally running around trying to put it together. And so these check-in times or ways to connect with one another can be doing things together that have to get done, but just make it fun.
One of the tips that we've included on Cool Mom Eats, and we've had some food experts on talking about it, is also incorporating kids into meal planning and bringing them to the grocery store with you, not just so that they have a say in things and feel empowered and, you know, eat healthier because they're making choices. It sounds like that's also an opportunity for kind of a real connectivity moment.
Yes, it's funny you should say that. I actually tried that on Martin Luther King Day when everybody was home on Monday. I said, all right, I'm open. Like, let's menu plan for this week. And for some reason, this week they were so lame. Everyone was like, I don't know, just whatever you get. And I was like, I can't believe it. Like, no one ever asked me as a kid, hey, what would you like this week? And I'll make it for you. But I totally agree. Like normally my kids are on that and they like that, you know, and they'll ask me for something different or like, oh, you haven't made this in a while. And I will tell you when I bring them to the store, though, I come home with all sorts of things I would not normally buy, but I do love it.
So basically you're a sucker.
We definitely have some different cereals
yes.
when they have more of a say in yes. picking it out with me in the store. And I'm much more inclined to get what they want when they're sitting there like asking for it in front of me, as opposed to when they tell me, you know, like, hey, go pick this up for me. And then I get to the store and I'm like, eh, I don't really have to go.
I find that when we go to the grocery store, so my 11-year-old has decided that she wants to pack her own lunches. So we went alone and, you know, she's piling in all of these things that are basically carbs. And so it brought up an opportunity for us to talk about what is protein? What is a carbohydrate? What are the vegetables you're having? What are the fruits, you know, that you're adding to your diet today? So, you know, I'm curious to know for you, like the meal planning, you're right. Like none of our parents, My mom never did that, never brought that up. But don't you feel like that is also teaching them about being healthy and taking care of themselves and making good choices when it comes to the foods they're putting in their bodies?
Yeah. Let me put now like my psychology hat on and step out of my mom mode for a sec, because I do really want to emphasize that one of the things that drives positive child development is a sense of accomplishment and purpose and mastery. And so when you said my 11-year-old now likes to pack her own lunch, that is incredibly significant. What that means is she feels like, I can do this. I have mastery over the food that I choose. And I don't mean, you know, kids are throwing 10 Oreos in and they're like, yeah, I packed my lunch. Like, truly, she is now in the stage, and it's a developmental stage. It is the same thing as, like, you know, when a toddler's like, no, hold hands. You know, they can walk on their own. That's the 11-year-old equivalent. And I think one of the things that could help parents is to look for those moments. A lot of times we do things for our kids because it's faster and it's easier. And we're robbing them of the opportunity of a developmental stage of mastery. And so I really wanted to highlight that.
I also think it's because she was sick of our lunches. She was like, I'm done with this, Mom. I don't like what you're packing for me. And you know what? That's great. She's done and she's ready to take it on her own. I'm thankful that you said that, because I was just like, really? We got to do another, you know, I'm happy for her to do it. It's one less kid for me to pack a lunch for. But it's cool that you offer those insights for parents, because oftentimes we do see these moments. They can kind of be, let's be honest, a little inconvenient. Like you said, know, it's like, oh, this is extra effort on my part. But when we're able to see that this is teaching them something and it's allowing us to connect. I mean, we went to the grocery store. I had her attention for a solid 30 minutes, part of which we were arguing about fruit snacks. But, you know, for the most part, it was great. And so, you know, thank you for that, because I think many times parents don't see it. And of course, we're talking about our own kids. So, you know, it's sometimes easier to talk about other people's kids, like Liz's kids, they're dreams. But like we talk about our own, it's a little more challenging.
Not when it comes to dinner so much, but when it comes to paying attention and following rules, yes.
That's true.
Excellent.
That's true.
We're still working past the beige foods phase for one of them, but we're getting there. We're getting there. You know, it's interesting. You talked earlier about grandparents, and I was so glad to hear you bring that up, because I know in my family, our grandparents, many, many grandparents are very active and involved in my kids' lives and upbringing, and they are an essential part of my village, and I could not raise my kids without them. And so I like that you brought up how grandparents come into play. Can you talk a little bit more about that, like grandparents and extended family and making connections with them? Because I think sometimes parents don't always think of that as an important aspect of their kids' lives, or how to like factor that in purposefully and mindfully.
Yeah. I mean, I could talk about this for a while from almost two different perspectives. One of them is, you are so lucky that you have this village of grandparents that sounds like are actively and regularly involved in your kids' lives. There's a smaller percentage of people in that boat. And the larger percentage of American families raising kids right now have grandparents that are farther than driving distance, like an airplane ride away. Regardless of whether the grandparents there, you know, every day after school or once a week or once a month or once a quarter, whenever, there is something that a grandparent brings that we cannot provide
yes,
for our kids.
100%. My daughter always wants to give my mom like world's best mom trophies on Mother's Day. And I'm like, hey,
hey, me. I totally agree. I mean, their time, their presence, their patience, their interest, their, oh, show me more. And their good old fashioned, like it really is more old fashioned baking with them, cooking with them. You know, like when I say I'm baking cookies, that really means I'm buying pre-made dough and I'm putting it in the oven. Like, you know, but like when the grandparents come, it's for real. Like, let's get the flour, let's get the sugar, let's get the milk, let's pour it, let's measure. Those are things that I really don't do. And I love baking, but for the most part, things are out of boxes, things are out of packages. So there is a presence and an experience and a slowness that they bring that our kids need. And the truth is that most of us parents cannot, do not provide. So I really value the role of grandparents and emotionally even what they represent and what they mean.
And I think that the other thing that's important, and I think part of why my kids are, and obviously not every grandparent is like super grandparent. We know that there's a lot of family dynamics in a lot of different kinds of families, as you know. But one of the things I like is that my kids have and have had a lot of time alone with the grandparents. And I think that's something that parents don't always think about. Like it can be hard to let go and let them have their own time and space if you have have a trusted grandparent, you know, isn't going to like do awful things or go against your values. But if you can trust them and you think it's a good relationship to develop, it's nice to give them time on their own without you to create meaningful connections.
I agree. And I do want to say something because, of course, you're right. I just was describing this really amazing, beautiful grandparent situation. Not everybody has that. But here's what I will say, because I deal with this a lot. And believe it or not, I see a lot of even extended families in my practice because there's so many issues. But I would say, as a little side tip for parents, like really try to separate out your issues with your parents or your in-laws. Try to separate that out from the relationship that they can have with your children. I would say, by and large, yes, there might be tension between you and your mother-in-law or you and your own mother or father. However, by and large, not always, but by and large, sometimes they're like a different person with your kids. And so if you can cultivate that or assure that that's what's happening and like the stress and the tension or the judginess, whatever it is, stays with you and not your kids. I really always try to encourage a lot of parents that I work with to try to get past some of those conflict areas to allow them to at least have a healthy relationship, even if you can't. And then for new parents, I just say, start off this new relationship, new parent, with clear boundaries and clear expectations. Everybody will do better. But if you want them to read your mind and, you know, not give them that much sugar or whatever it is, all the little things we get annoyed with, they're probably going to fail in your eyes.
And I have to say, for listeners who have not seen the movie On Golden Pond or haven't seen it in a long time, that's all I can think about. I'm like weepy just thinking about it. It's the most beautiful movie about, well, it's starring Jane Fonda and her real life father, Henry Fonda. And it's really about the difference between grandparent and kid relationships and grandchild relationships and how everybody's different relationships within the family and what has to heal and what comes naturally. It's so beautiful.
Oh, I'm so glad you just said that because I think I saw it when it first came out, and I probably didn't even understand it. So I want to add that to my list.
It's old, but I think it was like a Best Picture winner. It's really good.
Yeah.
And plus, you know, I can watch Jane Fonda and Henry Fonda basically, like if they read the phone book, I'd be there.
So are there any signs that parents should look for that would indicate a child, you know, teen, tween, whatever age, is in need of more connection time with their parents? I mean, you've shared so many helpful tips and tricks and ways that we can make that attempt, and whether that's on a regular basis or we're just filling in what we're already doing. But I imagine you probably see families where it's very clear that this child needs to connect with their parents. So what do we need to look for?
I think at different ages and stages, it'll look different. In the younger years, in the elementary years, kids are usually more overt about it. So they may act out. If you see a kid acting out, if you see a kid getting whiny, if you see them, you know, just being sort of mischievous and you're like, what is going on? That's probably their cry for help, you know, help or just attention. And so they don't have the filters yet. And they don't have all those guards up to be like, oh, I'm not going to essentially say I need attention. I'm going to shut down. That's the next stage. So the younger kids, they just are what they are. And they usually kind of act out when they need more connection. And really, you can give it to them because it's not about the quantity. It's just the quality. And I will say, I have so many examples of my own experiences or families that I work with where it was like, yes, really put that down in the morning when you feel like you're running around crazy. Spend the 5 minutes with them. Maybe they're saying, I can't find my other sock. And they're whining and they're doing all these things. And you think, I don't have time for this. I'm running around. But it's usually worth the investment of time to stop, help them. It all smooths over better and quicker than if you're constantly fighting back. Yes, you can. Go look for it. So I would say younger kids, they're sort of like act out usually to get attention and connection. And then tweens and teens, interestingly, a lot of times they shut down. And so I think if your kid is spending more time in their room, more time with a headset on, sort of having less eye contact, there's some of that that's normal. So you have to gauge, oh yeah, my kid always likes, you know, an hour or two by themselves. But you have to know that because that's baseline. Because if next Saturday they're 4 and 5 hours in their room, something's going on. They may feel disconnected from you. They may feel disconnected from friends. They may just feel disconnection. And I would say for tween and teen, it's hard for them to even maybe know that they want more connection from their parents. Sometimes they do, but I think a lot of times they just in general feel disconnected And so if you can be the start of a connection point, then that gets them in the better mindset to realize, like, yes, I wanted this from my parent, or actually I'm just really upset because everyone's at the mall and no one invited me, whatever it is. And then before you know it, you're really there for them. So just saying things like, hey, I'm just worried about you, or I'm checking in on you because I know normally you like to spend a little time, you know, every Saturday morning by yourself or something, but I feel like you've been in here for a really long time. That's different for you. So give them that context so you don't just seem like you're nagging them.
I think that's great. I also think that if you listen to kids, sometimes they're actually telling you that they need more time. I remember when my youngest was really little, like maybe 2 or 3, and I would be working at home. So I was on the computer and they didn't understand the difference between work time and mommy time. And she would literally grab my face, my chin, and pull it towards her to look at her.
Yes.
And first of all, heartbreaking. I was like, oh, I have to work. But it was her way of saying, like, I need you. I need you to focus on this. And even now, there are times that my kids will be like, hey, can we, like, do family dinner tomorrow night? Or can we all go to a restaurant? They are pretty good at now expressing it. And I think sometimes if we just take the time to listen more carefully to what they're saying, kids might be asking you for family time.
Yeah.
Just from my observation with my, now I have 2 teenagers in the house and 2 tweens, I have to say that sometimes when they come up to me, I will be busy and they'll start talking about something and they won't leave and I'll go, oh, okay, I get it. Like, you want to talk to me. And sometimes it's not necessarily they're starting a conversation. They might be complaining about something or they might be asking me for something, but it's very clear that they're trying to get something from me. And I've been doing my best to be a little more vigilant because I think sometimes we see tweens and teens and we think they're more independent. They don't need us. Like, this is great for them. They're responsible now, but they still need us, right? Like, they still need us to be there and to be interested and to be connected with them.
And they want to know that we want to be with them also.
Yes.
Even when they don't want to be with us, they want to know that we want to.
They want you to want them. Sorry. It just felt like the time.
No, you're totally right. And for people listening, like, I have a 12-year-old daughter, and when she gets home from work, she literally, if I didn't stop her, she would talk, I swear, for a straight hour without taking a breath, I think. And she just talks and talks. And really, I have to work on my patience because, first of all, I have 2 other kids. Usually that's the time where I have to figure out where am I driving, or I have to start cooking dinner, whatever it is. I remind myself, so for anybody who needs to hear this, that she will not always want to talk to me this way. And so I need to give her that attention. Or sometimes, because she talks a lot, I'll say, time out, just pause, just hold your thought right there. Let me do this, and then we'll come back to it. That's like progression for me, because at some points I used to just be like, you have to wrap the story up. My head would feel overwhelmed. I was just overwhelmed by
Cheryl, I feel like my mouth is moving and your words are coming out.
Yeah.
I have been there in both of those positions, maybe even as recently as last night. Well, this advice is so good and so helpful. I think this is such a good resolution or goal or mission or whatever you call it for the year. And I think this is a really good time to be talking about fostering real connections and more connections, and that it doesn't always have to be about the big trip to Disney World. It can be these little things. So tell us, where can we learn more about you and your work? I know you have a website, drcherylziegler.com. That's spelled S-H-E-R-Y-L. Where else can we find you? Are you on the socials?
I'm on the socials under usually Dr. Cheryl Ziegler, and my Facebook's under Mommy Burnout. You can find me there, and I'm usually posting or sharing things about self-care and stress management and kids and connection.
And you have a podcast too. Tell us about your podcast.
Yeah. So I have a podcast called Dr. Cheryl's Pod Couch, and I talk about all things mental health and conversations with transparency. So there too, I just try to talk about, probably like you guys, just topics that to me are interesting and can enhance our lives. Because one of my fundamental beliefs is that to really be able to connect with your kids, you have to take care of yourself first. If I have all these to-do lists or I'm really stressed out and then my kid comes home from work, I'm irritable, I'm less patient. And so I'm really about the backdoor way to helping your kids is to help yourself first. So that's really what I'm usually chatting with other people about. about, and authors and other great thinkers.
And I love Dr. Cheryl's pod couch. Kristen, we need Liz and Kristen's pod closet.
Yes. Oh my gosh. That's amazing. No, I love that. And our listeners can subscribe right now while you're listening. You can do that if you're not subscribed to Spawned, and then head over to Dr. Cheryl's podcast, or pod couch, I should say, as well. And you're going to stick around for our cool picks of the week, right, Cheryl?
Yes, I am.
Okay, we'll be right back with our cool picks of the week after this.
We are so happy to welcome today's sponsor, Milk Love What's Real. As you can tell, we value the real experiences and connections we make in our families. And when you think about it, Milk really is a part of so many of the moments and memories that matter to us.
You may pour a cup or two of whole milk to make their weekly Sunday morning blueberry pancake breakfast rich and flavorful. Pour it into cereal or homemade granola, even busy weekday mornings when you want to squeeze in some family time before school. You can offer strawberry milk for a sweet celebration after a game or a recital, or simply serve 2% milk to bring more nutrition into after-school snack time. Surely, you have your own family memories that involve milk, too.
You can visit milklife.com, that's milklife.com, for recipes, nutrition facts, and more information about all the different kinds of real milk. That's milklife.com. And hey, follow them on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at milklife. And for even more ideas from parents and families of all kinds, just check out the hashtag LoveWhat'sReal.
Okay, we're back with our
cool picks of the week. Cool picks of the week.
And Cheryl, you are our guest. You get to go first.
Yay. Okay, so my pick of the week is the Red Cross nail clippers made by the First Years. It is less than $3. And I have used it from baby, like 7 days old, all the way through 12 years old. And there is something magical and special about this nail clipper. It doesn't leave sharp edges.
Magic nail clippers.
Magic nail clippers.
That's so cool.
I love them. They're my hands down favorite. And I give them away at baby showers all the time.
Oh my gosh. That's wonderful. That's like a really useful, helpful suggestion. Thank you.
You're welcome.
We're in the house where we just like have lost nail clippers. So I'm going to keep that in mind when we have to replace ours, which will probably be like really soon.
You're gonna be like, oh my god,
our nail clippers are partying with all our tweezers. I don't know where they all go. It's like they're having a, I don't know where they go, but
they're all
with
together. The safety pins and that left sock that you haven't seen for so
exactly.
long.
Exactly,
they're all together somewhere. So my cool pick, well, as we know, the Lunar New Year is upon us, but not everybody realizes it's not just Chinese New Year's. It's also celebrated by Korea, Vietnam, Tibet. And in honor of that, I found an awesome new Etsy shop. My friend Dara suggested it. It's a friend of hers named Christine G. So what she did to honor her South Korean heritage is she created a shop called Dumpling Mart on Etsy. Kristen, you will love this. She makes these adorable, affordable little hand-sewn wool felt dumplings. They can be magnets, like for your bulletin board. It can be play food. She has some really cute, funny Valentines on the site. If you get that in time, like in little rice cookers that say like, you're the wonton for me.
Aww.
You know, we like a good pun.
We do.
Or you make me hot and steamy. I have fillings for you. I have fillings for you. So funny. Anyway, it's a really cute little shop. I love it for like gifts for little kids or even your Sig Auth. Again, it's Etsy. Just search for Dumpling Mart.
Awesome. Well, you know, we had spoken about great shows that we can all watch together as a family. And so that's my cool pick of the week is Cheer on Netflix. I don't know. Have either of you heard the buzz about this
show? I've heard it's so good. There was a woman next to me on the plane watching it on her iPad. And I was like, what is that? What is that? And then a week later, everyone's talking about
it. It's really good. So it's an episodic documentary on Netflix about a junior college cheerleading team. They're actually the national champions. Well, they were going into, I won't give it away, they were going into 2019. I actually have been a very longtime fan of college cheerleading. I've always been amazed at the athleticism, at the fact that after they finish college, there's really nowhere for them to go. You know, it's very different than what you might see, you know, cheering for basketball or football. It's always amazing to me. And so they've brought this to life in such a fantastic way. They follow the coach. They follow some of these students who come from diverse and very many of them come from very difficult backgrounds. It's riveting. And the best part is that all my kids have enjoyed watching it. So we've been watching it together as a family. So I highly recommend it's Cheer on Netflix. Have the tissues nearby. You will need them at some point, perhaps more than you think.
Let me ask you, is it more like the documentary version of Bring It On, or is it more like Friday Night Lights?
I've seen neither of those things. I did see the first season of Friday Night Lights. It's not drama riddled or, you know, that kind of thing. It's not reality television. It's okay. Really following the lives of the students. So I would say Friday Night Lights, there was I felt a lot of drama in there. This is really more about where these students came from and how they got into cheerleading and their experience in this environment, which is super competitive and grueling and sometimes life-threatening in some of the things that they're doing. So it has a serious tone. I wouldn't call it funny. Certainly inspiring and enlightening is how I would describe it.
Ooh, okay. Adding to queue now.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that. I'm on it. I've never heard of it or seen it, so I'm psyched.
Awesome.
Cheryl, thank you for joining us. Yes. I know this is going to be so helpful for our listeners.
Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks so much for joining us for another episode of Spawned. Huge thanks to our engineer, John Bowen, and a big thanks to our guest, Dr. Cheryl Ziegler, and to our sponsor, Milk Life.
And hey, we love hearing from you, of course, because you are our listeners and we value you most of all, with all due respect to John, our awesome engineer. Please leave us a review on iTunes. We love the nice things you're writing about us. Keep them coming. It makes us feel really good. And make sure to subscribe. In fact, you can do it right now, and be sure to download our episode so you can listen offline. And believe it or not, it actually helps other people find us so we can keep doing what it is we do here every week.
Thanks so much for listening to Spawn. This is Kristen.
And this is Liz. Have a great day.
Bye.